What's up, everybody? We are back again with another episode of Octagon Control through the power of Apple and FaceTime. We are here, not in studio today, but still ready to do the show. UFC 169 this weekend. It is officially Saturday, as the Super Bowl will be Sunday, we assume, and I think seems pretty set in stone. So your UFC Saturday, Super Bowl Sunday, huge weekend in sports, but we're here to cover MMA. Last weekend, we had UFC on Fox. Was this the 10th time around?
Yeah, that was the, it was the 10th edition.
UFC on Fox 10. Obviously headlined by Benson Henderson, Josh Thompson. Controversial decision. Chris, I know you and I had opposing viewpoints. Why don't you give me a breakdown of how you scored this?
Well, I have not. The one thing I have done is I've went back and watched the fight. The second time I actually scored for Josh Thompson. It's just the thing with Benson is he doesn't have the thing that I think, well, maybe doesn't look as clean, but maybe looks better live. I have this theory that even though the media never seems to score it for him, he hits a lot to the body and the legs. So maybe he's not doing as many things to the head, like punches to the head or striking. But I thought his takedowns were really effective. I thought even in the first round, I thought Thompson definitely was a first round. But that wasn't a blowout round when you consider the fact that he also went for a submission there. Just kind of looking at the scorecard, I would have been cool with 3-2 either way. And I could even see 4-1 either way. But I went 1 Thompson. And I think when I scored it live, I went 4-1 4 the rest of the way for Benson. And then the second time I had 1-3 and 4 for Thompson, but again, 5 was really, really close. I could even score that at 10-10 and be okay with that. I feel like I could watch this fight 10 times and think that someone else won. I mean, I really do think that it was that kind of fight.
And here's the thing, first off, you think about that and you look at the statistics. I would have never guessed that Benson Henderson's striking output, his total strikes he landed, were more than double what Josh Thompson threw. And even the significant strikes were more. Thompson tried a lot of takedowns. Here's the thing, and I think this is huge with Benson Henderson. The guy has such great submission defense. Even in bad positions, he was in a body triangle twice. He doesn't look like he's any danger because he handles it so calmly. He stood up, he walked, a lot of pressure on Josh Thompson's ankles and his feet, and he let go. It's that skill that you're able to know when pressure is coming and able to calm down. It's why he has such good submission defense. I know someone's going to go, oh, well, Anthony Pettis submitted him. Everyone gets submitted.
And he has admitted that he made a very technical mistake on the ground. And that's going to happen. I mean, he broke it down. He admitted that he made a mistake. But at one point or another, everyone gets caught.
And the other thing is, Benson Henderson has this way of never looking like... He doesn't look like he takes damage. He takes it very well. He's able to take shots. And even on the Showtime kick, he got knocked down. But he didn't look like it affected him at all.
He immediately went, if I remember, tried to look for a takedown after that. He, tried to squirm.
And I think that's such a huge thing with Benson Henderson, is how he has such a high fighter IQ. There's guys like the Diaz brothers that go in there, and if you don't fight their game plan, everything falls apart. Benson Henderson is someone who knows how to control the game plan. He knows how to control the pace. He knows, no matter the situation, he has this ability. He's never too flustered to where everything goes out the window. And I think that's what makes him such a solid competitor, and that's what makes this so much closer. I scored it for Josh Thompson. I thought he won 3-2. I would have loved to have seen it without a broken hand. But the lightweight division now is just, it's a mess. It's a mess.
Yeah, you can't really deny that either, because that division is... to me, the fight never exactly made sense, because if Benson wins, you get a former champion back on the winning in the win column, but you're losing the guy who might be the most marketable for Anthony Pettis, one of the most marketable guys who's had some heat in Josh Thompson. Benson's certainly not going to be in a title fight anytime soon. his best case is maybe that he fights Habib at this point. I mean, that's probably the highest fight he's looking at. Unless, you know, I think Cerrone and Habib would be amazing. But, you know, it's just you don't really have a... It's almost better that Pettis is out and might probably will fight Aldo. It looks like if Aldo wins this weekend, because that fight is like a clear cut. You can't really dispute the number one contender fight. At this point, maybe TJ Grant can come back and him and Gilbert Melendez can fight as the in the co-main. Like, of that card, and, you know, that's a number one contender fight. You can kind of work it that way, but Thompson, to me, was one of the more interesting fights for Anthony Pettis, and, I mean, he's not around now.
Yeah. The Anthony Pettis thing is huge, and, you know, it sucks that Benson lost that second fight the way he did. If it was such a close decision like the first one, you could have probably argued that, you know, you could get away with three. Maybe not immediately, but in time. The issue is, you know, the Showtime kick sticks in everyone's head, and then he got armbarred in the first round. Those are two things that really stick out. Gilbert Melendez has lost to Benson. You know, Nate Diaz has lost to Benson. Nate Diaz refuses to fight Gilbert Melendez. You're looking at a guy like Khabib, Gilbert Melendez possibly getting a shot at Showtime, and Jose Aldo.
I think Aldo has to me, Aldo is the biggest fight they can make at 155.
It really is. And it's a huge fight, and I love the fight, first off. And it really does help my predictions of there will be two alpha male champs. So we should make that happen. But, now there was, we obviously touched weight on lightweights, Benson Henderson, Josh Thompson. The other fighters you got to look at, first off, Jeremy Stephens is just a beast at 145.
Yeah, okay. That guy's making pressure. I'll play counterpoint to you. I think the next fight he fights at 145, he will lose.
Who do you give him then?
Well, he's coming off a win, so you look at the guys coming off a win. That could be Poirier. You could even do Swanson, depending, because Swanson's not getting a title fight right now, unless they do him and Mendes for the vacant belt, but that's to be determined. You could even really do... You could do... I mean... Did Bermudez win his last? You could do Kawajiri. I mean, there's some options for him.
I believe Bermudez is fighting someone.
Okay, well, I'm saying no matter who he fights in his next fight, the guys he could get matchup against, I think this is as high as he goes. He's had a nice little run at 145. He's beaten some nice guys, knocked out Ronnie Jason in Brazil, you know, looked great, but I don't think he's a legit contender at this weight class. He still, to me, has a lot of flaws as a fighter. He looks better, but it's also a slightly shallower weight class in, like, the 10 to 15 range. And I still don't think when he fights a guy who has, like, really, really good striking to back to help better set up his takedowns. Because Darren Elkins is a good grinding kind of guy, but he also can't set up his takedowns effectively. He just kind of shoots, and Stevens is able to kind of see them being telegraphed and, like, push them off him. He fights a guy like Poirier, who's as a Christopher Striker, or if you watch Kawajiri is bigger. He is, and he sets up his takedowns better. He fights Cub Swanson. Cub Swanson's gonna light him up on the feet. He fights Mendez. Let's say he fights Chad Mendez. Mendez destroys him. I think this is as high as he goes. Not to put a damper on what he did because it was impressive, but this is as high as he is in this weight class.
Now, here's what we're looking at. Dennis Bermudez is ranked 14th. He's fighting Jimmy Hetz at 171. That's in March. That's a realistic possibility. I assume Bermudez wins. So I can see that as a fight that gets made. That's doable. Then you look at 7 through 9 with Stevens being ranked 10th. Dennis Seaver coming off a loss. Nick Lentz coming off a loss. Clay Guida coming off a loss. Chan Sung Jung, loss and injury. I mean, he threw his shoulder out. You really are. You're looking at Cub Swanson. You're looking at Dustin Poirier. And if you really want to make it interesting, you're giving him Frankie Edgar.
What? He's fighting BJ Penn.
Sorry. He is. My mistake. So you're looking at Cub Swanson Poirier. I'm going to have to agree with you. I love how he looks, but based on rankings, I put him ahead of Clay Guida and Nick Lentz and even probably Dennis Seaver.
I'd probably even pick Seaver against him, to be honest.
But I disagree with Bud. Featherweight's just very deep. And, you know, all these guys have improved since their time in the WEC. But obviously, we've seen if the lighter weight class still don't get any love, but I mean, look at how deep those divisions are.
He just can't. I don't think this. It's nice. He can be in some interesting fights, but I'm not. I mean, he's just not elite.
We also had the curious case of Donald Cerrone. Finishes a head kick.
Best case scenario for him. Flat out. Best thing.
Yeah, he had to finish it. It just, yo, when he's on, he's on. When he's off, he frustrates the hell out of you. And obviously, the other fight, Stipe, nothing special. He outboxed Gonzaga, showed he had better cardio. I've never seen a professional fighter not be able to make it out of the first 2.5 minutes of a fight gasped. That was kind of embarrassing. Kind of want to move past that. But, obviously, the prospect, Sergio Pettis, lost to Caceres in an amazing fight. Not so much how he looked, but I do think this shows you have to set him up slow. He's 20 years old? Guy can't even buy a beer yet. And he's fighting the biggest organization in the world. So just take him up slow. You know, this is his first loss, and everyone learns something from a loss. Or at least the good fighters do. I think he's a good fighter. The thing that sucks is he's 5'6". He's had trouble making 125, you said. That it's a hard cut for him to make 125. And he's not going to be able to make that when he fully matures. You look at him now, he still has boy muscles. You know, those aren't man fully developed strength muscles. So there's no way he's going to make 125 when he's older. But I think with his brother, I think with Duke Rufus, I think he can be a very interesting prospect at 35.
Here's the thing about Sergio, though. The difference, I think, but that I kind of didn't really notice until this weekend because he got pushed, really, and I kind of maybe saw it in that last fight, is that, A, he's still very early in his developmental curve, and this might be a little bit too much too soon. But he also just doesn't seem to have, like, and one of Anthony's best traits is that he's just super, super fast. And he's just super, super quick and is just, like, explosive. And his technique is very good, but it's not, like, the basis for everything he does. And Sergio, to me, seems to be a little more reliant on how sound his technique is to get to kind of throw, to be flashy and whatnot. I don't think he's quite the athlete Anthony is. And there's no shame in that because Anthony is a very good athlete, but I don't think he has that. And he's built a little bit differently, obviously, a little stockier than Anthony. He's not as lean and long. I know, but, I mean, Anthony did lose. I mean, you got to think about this. I mean, Anthony lost to Bar Palaszewski, of all people. Think about that for a second. He also was struggling with, who was it in the WBC? Fought him out.
Was it Shane Roller?
No, I thought he pretty handily beat Shane Roller there.
I couldn't remember. That's why I just pulled out a name.
He fought him on the undercard of, the Aldo Faber card, I want to say. Alexis. Like, he was having some issues in that fight. I mean, even in the UFC, he barely got by Jeremy Stevens. Like, that fight, he had out-wrestled Jeremy Stevens. I mean, there's really only, like, his last three fights have, since the Benson fight, he lost to Guida, just got taken down, you know, lackluster against Stevens. Until he knocked out Lozon, did what he did, just mutilated Cerrone, and then submitted Benson, he was not, like, flashy Anthony Pettis. And he was still growing. I mean, there's time for Sergio. Let's hope they take him slow. He gets someone. I'm not... The 125 thing's whatever, but we'll see.
You ready to make some picks, though?
Yeah. I want to ask you a question, though.
Let's hear it.
Out of the two Nova Uniao guys, Brow and Aldo, who do you think is more likely to lose their title over the weekend?
It wasn't a blowout in the first fight. There's no doubt Henan Brow is, you know, an unbelievable fighter. He's probably still improving, but he's hittable. Michael McDonald showed he's hittable. You know, Uriah Faber, I think the striking is a huge game changer now. And Aldo, you know, while he tends to gas, I just think he's too explosive for Lamas. And Lamas needs to get it to the ground, which is obviously going to be difficult against Aldo.
Yeah. I agree. But I also think that Lamas, if he can, he is a I think the kind of style matchup that could be problematic. But we'll see. I mean, I tend to think that there's a very good chance both guys win in routes. I think that's possible, but as you know already, you know who I'm picking in the main, and that will not be the case in the main event, I don't think.
So, where do you want to start?
Ooh, you know what? Let's go, Caricio, and, let's just go Varner and up.
Alright.
New main card.
Yeah, main card. Jamie Varner, Abel Trujillo. Abel Trujillo's coming off that second victory, kind of, against, Roger Poland, correct? Since the groin shot?
Right.
Prior to that, it was a loss to Khabib. This is a tough fight to call. You know, Jamie Varner is one of those guys, he was out for a long time. And, you know, he lost to Gleison Tibau. That was a really close fight. He had beat Melvin Gallard. I'm tempted to pick Jamie Varner. However, I am going to go Abel Trujillo. I think he has the wrestling defense to stuff it, and I think he's just the more powerful fighter.
I think he's more powerful. I think his best chance to win this fight early, but I actually think Varner's going to get this via decision. I really think that Trujillo could definitely end this early, but I also think that Varner's just looked a lot better since making his comeback, kind of overcoming that stretch on the regional circuit where it was very bad.
Where he lost to Dakota Cochran?
Yeah, but, yeah, I mean, just looked bad. And I think he gets it done. I think he weathers a storm early. And I think you might be a little wrong about Trujillo's wrestling because two fights ago, Habib's obviously an elite grappler, but Habib just took him down at will. I can see Varner taking him down repeatedly and winning this fight via top control.
We shall see, as we know.
I think there's a decent chance. Well, I think on four or five of these card picks, I think we're going to be different. I don't know who you're picking in all of them, but I think we're going to be four out of five.
Next one, we have John Lineker and Ali Bagatinov. Lineker's no doubt an impressive fighter. He's clearly one of the best at 129 pounds.
him and Henry Cuejo for the catchweight championship of the world. Did you see he missed weight? He weighed in at 128 and for Legacy FC.
Oh boy! But Lineker did make weight the second time around. Granted, he still hasn't. Has he ever made weight at 125 first try?
He has never hit... Well, he's made weight, but he has never hit 125.
You're not going to put this guy in a title fight.
Mm-mm.
And this is clearly a huge weight cut. This is a big step up in competition for him. I think Ali Bagatinov is a very talented fighter. He looked great against Tim Elliott. I'm taking Bagatinov.
I'm going to go Lineker, man. I think if he just hits him with some bungalows, and as long, I mean, I worry about the conditioning, for sure, but I do think that, you know, Lineker's just going to hit him with bombs and going to get this way early. I think he might have to save his job. I mean, I think win or lose here, he's in rumble territory.
Could he squeak by with the decision victory? Could he save his job if he gets a squeaky split?
Not unless it's a great fight. This has to be really, really exciting, or he just wins, like, so impressively and, like, begs for his job that he can't get cut. I mean, he looks like he probably should go to 35.
Who do you give him next if he says, no, I want to stay at 25?
He actually never, I learned this today, he never fought at 25 before he came to the UFC.
Doesn't make sense.
He should be at one, if he needs to win, keep his job, and then just go to 35. And just to stop worrying about the weight. He could be good at 135, too. I do believe that.
Next fight. Maybe another job saver. For one of them, for sure. Frank Mir, Alistair Overeem. Chris, I don't know if you're going to disagree with me on this one. I'm going Alistair Overeem.
Yeah,
He has good takedown defense. Well, good enough takedown defense, let's say that. And that's really Mir's only chance. Mir has very beginner-level striking. And when he gets hit early, you know, he's had a couple comebacks, but he tends to kind of close up and, you know, go back to, if I get hit, I'm going square to my back and hope you come into my guard. We've seen it with Junior Dos Santos. you know, if it's not someone that he can kind of control with the grappling, and I don't think he can control Overeem, he's in big trouble. I've taken Overeem and more than likely a finish.
I'm taking Overeem in round one, so we do agree here. The thing here is, though, that one thing I'll disagree with you about this is that I think that unless Mir... If Mir comes out and gets blown out again, he might be, like, get the retirement talk. Overeem would probably just get cut.
He said he isn't.
Yeah, but we'll see. But, I think that both guys could still be in the roster. Like, in certain situations, they'd lose. I mean, it's just, like, it'd be different if this was lightweight, but they're both, like, the UFC needs all the heavyweights they can get still. And if Overeem wins, he'll be in a big, relatively high-profile fight next. Don't doubt that at all.
The thing with Overeem, too, is he was dominating his two losses.
He shouldn't have lost either of them.
If that ref jumps in versus Travis Brown, he wins.
And he's probably, it's conceivable that he's the number one contender right now.
If he doesn't kind of screw around with Bigfoot, he wins. You know, those are two things. He was dominating those fights and he blew it. And, obviously that's huge and that affected him. But it's not as if he's just been outclassed, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to go over him though. I think he gets this done early. I think Mir tends to not respond to pressure well. He's going to get bombed. Overeem's going
to
finish his
turn. And then he'll go to Bellator.
I hope Mir never fights again. But it's moving like, on. But the same thing is, it's like, his losses are going to be against Dos Santos, Cormier, Barnett, and Overeem. It's not like he's losing to freaking, like, Czech Congo, Sean Jordan, and, like, Nikolai Krayov and Walt Harris. Like, he's fighting the elite when he's losing.
And it's because he has a name that he can't give him a fight to get his confidence back. These are his confidence boosters.
Like,
here's Alistair Overeem.
Like, if he went down and fought, like, Jared Rosholt, he would submit him in the first round. And then he'd fight, like, if he fought, like, Pat Barry, he would submit Pat Barry. I mean, it wasn't too long ago that he just, like, destroyed Roy Nelson on the ground. He has two wings over Big Nog, like.
And he's finished both times. He knocked him out first person, knocked him out first person to submit him. So it's really frustrating to see this. But we do got to get to the title fights. First one, Jose Aldo, Ricardo Lamas. Lamas has done this the right way, if anything. You know, didn't do a lot of talking. Waited his turn. He finally gets it. Goes up against Jose Aldo. Chris, I haven't had the opportunity to see the weigh-in yet. How was Aldo looking?
He looked good, he looked cheery, looked really in good shape. But we'll see if that translates to tomorrow night. I mean, but I actually don't think, I'll give my prediction first, I don't think this fight's getting out of round three. I think Aldo's going to finish this within the first three rounds. He just is too good of a defensive wrestler to get taken down by Lamas, who is a bull, is very good, but if Mendez can't get him down, I don't think Lamas can, and I think Aldo's going to pick him apart, leg kicks, is going to finish his via TKO within the first three rounds.
The other thing with, you know, Jose Aldo, I think he has a ton riding on this fight. He knows what's at stake. I think he defends the belt. There's no doubt about that. But I think he does this decisively. He's going to finish it, and then he's going to move up to 55 and call out Anthony Pettis.
Him and Pettis will fight if he wins. I think they fight in over the summer for a unification bout.
Probably, I'm thinking 4th of July card.
Yeah.
Now, our main event. Penn and Burrell, Uriah Faber. Faber, you know, as much as people want to complain that he's given title shots and all this, you know, yada, yada, yada. The guy earns it. His only losses are in title fights. He lost two at a higher weight class than he realistically probably should have been. Two to Aldo, two to Mike Brown. The second Mike Brown was him with broken hands and he couldn't throw a punch. And then Henan Burrell and Dominic Cruz. Those are his six losses. And the Dominic Cruz fight was close. So, sorry if you're mad that he gets title shots, but he earns them. Look what he's done to everyone else in either division. Now, Henan Burrell looked like a beast, hasn't lost in 8 years, had that beautiful knockout over Eddie Wineland. But, and this is a big but, I made a prediction at the end of 2013, and I said two alpha male fighters would be UFC champions in 2014. Now, obviously I was kind of planning on Joseph Benavidez being one and Chad Mendes being the other, but either way, you gotta stick to your guns, no matter how confident you are, and I'm not confident, but Uriah Faber earns the belt, he gets a decision victory, and he finally gets the UFC belt that he covets. Or desires.
I'm gonna say he does too, but I think it's very... I mean, I watched the first fight actually today, from UFC Fight Pass, and I watched it with no sound, and two things that I noticed were, I think it was closer than Rogan and Goldberg kind of commentated it. I mean, I also think Faber was doing a lot. He broke his rib in the first round, and that changed everything. I mean, you break a rib. I think he's improved more than Barao has since that fight, but also he had to. I think he needs to look for more takedowns. I think his jiu-jitsu is good enough to not get submitted. I think he's gonna have to definitely do a better job with kicks in this fight and can do. I mean, the thing here, I think where this fight gets decided is in distance, because when Faber's destroyed people as of late, it's because he's just been able to control the distance and then manipulate it to land big shots like he did against Michael McDonald. That he won that fight because he was able to control where McDonald was throwing his punches and then getting inside and just putting a beating on McDonald. That's very hard to do against Barao. Barao is excellent at throwing the leg kicks to keep the distance. That being said, I think Faber, this is probably his last shot of the belt. I think unless it's like a split, like a robbery or something, this is his last shot. I think he's going to get it done. I think it's going to be a 48-47 decision for Faber. But it also wouldn't shock me if Barao, like, destroyed him either. Because Barao, I hate when they use that promo because it just makes me laugh. They call him a monster. But he is very good. He might be one of the best fight fighters in the world right now. I think there's an argument for that. And he has the perfect skill set to get Faber fit. So, I'm going to go Faber. But that might just be me, honestly, that might be just be more of me really thinking, like, I want to see this guy get a belt.
I think we all do. You know, it's hard not to like Faber. The guy's, you know, he built the WEC, to say the least. And I think it would be a fitting end to his career if he wins the UFC belt. You know, these are the things you look at. It sucks that a guy like Uriah Faber had to pay his dues in the WEC because there wasn't 135 and 145 in the UFC when he was dominating. Those, you know, things like that happen. So, but I'm choosing him. I think he gets the belt. And, you know, obviously I think it's going to be a great moment for him. For the UFC, I don't think it could be any better. However, that does wrap up our show. We'll be back again next week. We'll definitely make sure that happens. We will be watching the fights tomorrow, and we will see you next week. Follow Chris on Twitter @CWMWrights. Follow me @Nikolai_Gianti. We are out of here.